Hello out there to Team Silo TV. Alicia here, back with Luke for another Silo Season 2 mailbag, this time covering through Episode 5. So spoilers for everything that's aired so far. And Luke, what's our spoiler policy otherwise?
So Alicia has read all the books that go to comprise the TV series Silo. I have read none of them. So Alicia will be talking about stuff that happens in the book, if it's happened in Season 1, or if it's happened up to the end of Episode 5. In Season 2, but we will not be talking about anything past that point.
Right. So yeah, I'll keep mum about any book stuff that hasn't yet happened on screen, but if you are interested in that sort of discussion, you can find breakdowns of all the books and short stories, plus 2 book spoiler pack Season 1 rewatch episodes, and weekly extra spoiler casts in the book club. And stick around at the end to hear more about that. Full disclosure though, Luke and I do have screeners this year, which is how we're able to get the episodes out in a more timely manner, but we are not watching ahead of the episodes that we're recording for the episode breakdowns. So all of our speculation in those episodes, 100% genuine, but we do need to wait to record these mailbag episodes until the episodes have actually aired. So we've watched a little bit ahead at this point. As we're recording this, we've both seen through Episode 7, because we're going to be recording the Episode 7 breakdown immediately after this one. But we promised not to give anything away. Just a fun little tease though. Luke, we know you were iffy on Episode 4, and you were back on board for Episode 5. What are your non-spoiler headline thoughts on Episodes 6 and 7?
Yeah, this series is really starting to pick up pace now. It's really starting to get some momentum. And it's a sacrifice, listeners. I'm not going to pretend that it isn't not to, like, just binge the whole thing right the way through to the end. Because I want to know what happens!
Yeah, I'm especially excited for people to see the next 2 episodes for, I think you know, reasons. Some things happen that I can't wait for people to see this. Yeah.
Yes.
I think genuinely each episode is better than the last this season. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the whole series from Episode 1, Season 1, has been of exceptionally high quality so far.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, we also heard today, we got a ping from Ed Moore, who's a UK cinematographer, who's also known for shows like Hijack, but worked specifically on Silo, of course, specifically on Episode 5. And he was sharing some videos of how they did the cinematography of the opening shot of Episode 5. So we get, like, at this opening shot, just to remind you, there's this one long continuous shot that shows, like, full extent of the set. So you see it's smoothly swinging out to a wall and then out into the shaft, and the camera is gliding around the stairs as the mob marches down, pulling up to the landing where the 4 fugitives are hiding out, catching their breath. In Ed Moore's words, he says, "Used my DJI Ronin 4D for this, taking advantage of the superb connected sets to walk the camera down one alleyway, then a perfectly executed handoff onto a magnetic clamp on a computer-controlled winch rig, which took it out over the void." And there's also in this thread a shot of him operating the camera through this on a wire track, and another video of the camera operator's practice run, which is hilariously trippy because it has a fisheye lens. And a shot of the control setup. So, and he says, "So proud of this shot and the impeccable team of professionals that all had to be on their A game to deliver the results. You should definitely go watch right now on Apple TV Plus." Heart. So Luke, you got to watch these videos as well. What did you think?
I mean, it's really impressive. Mm-hmm. And like, Rebecca Ferguson has said this in interviews. Common has said this in interviews. Like, the size of the sets are, you know, really impressive, because mm-hmm. obviously they don't have the complete silo, but they do have like a good cross section of staircase.
Mm-hmm.
That's obviously shot against the blue screen background. It's really impressive, and
hallways attached to that as well.
Yeah, and the hallways are attached to them. And thank you very much, Ed, if you're listening for that. Thanks for reaching out. That was very nice of you.
And I'm sharing a link in the show notes with a post to that Blue Sky thread with his videos, so you can take a look for yourselves. And I also want to thank, by the way, our friend Rebecca Fan, who has been sharing key behind the scenes videos with me this season. And I especially recommend the Adam Savage series, where he goes and he meets with key members of the crew and goes on, gets really deep into all the crafts behind Silos, from action to costumes and various things. So I'll link the latest video she shared, which is about how the staircase set was conceived and built. But I recommend going to Adam Savage's channel and just searching Silo there to see the rest of them, because they're all very interesting behind the scenes stuff. But today we are here to hear from all of you, to hear from the community. Let's get into it.
Now opening the listener feedback channel.
So we've got some trailing feedback for episode 3, but mostly today we're going to be focusing on episodes 4, Harmonium, and 5, Descent. And the next mailbag, by the way, is going to be after episode 8, so after the holidays. So do keep sharing your thoughts via woolshiftdustpodcast@gmail.com. And we also hope that you'll check out our Discord and Blue Sky to chat with us as well. So the feedback, it's mostly in episode order. Sometimes gets a little mixed up. So let's just go along for the ride. And as I said, starting first, jumping back a little bit to episode 3, we had some discussion about, Luke, you've talked about whether or not this entire Silo setup could be a social experiment. So yeah, we got some feedback on that from two people. So Ashley S. says, if it were a social experiment, then I'm thinking each Silo would have to have an exact DNA clone of one another from the beginning of creation, right? I'm wondering how else you minimize variables in human behavior. I haven't listened to the new pod ep yet. I'm not sure if this has already been discussed. I think I have to wonder, is it the humans being studied or the effectiveness of the order? And yeah, I mean, Ashley, if they want to be super scientific about it, that's how they would have to do it.
Yeah, it's true. I think it's the effectiveness of the order. And maybe actually what they're studying is, you know, what the effects of variables might be. But yeah, you're right. And like, yeah, if you want to be super scientific about it, you have to keep the dependent variable the same. So yeah, they'd have to be clones.
Yeah. And Jesse adds, anything feels possible regarding the genesis of the Silos, etc., but Occam's razor to me says it's simply a natural or climate disaster of some kind that humankind was ill-prepared for. And for anyone who doesn't know, Occam's razor is basically a principle that says, in most cases, the simplest explanation is the correct one.
So I've always thought it would have to be some kind of an environmental disaster, because it would have to be a disaster that you knew was coming. A disaster that you knew wasn't survivable on the surface, and a disaster that happened slowly enough that you actually had time to build the Silo. So, that to me rules out war, a nuclear war, because you wouldn't have time to construct the Silo. Or the only way that makes sense is if the Silo were constructed in the aftermath of a nuclear war, possibly. But I've always sort of leaned towards this must have been some sort of slow-moving climate change / environmental disaster to give you time to actually construct the Silos in the first place.
Okay. I'm obviously not going to comment. For anyone who doesn't know, I do know the answers to this. Or at least I know the book answers. Who knows with the show?
She takes such joy when she's able to say that, listeners.
I know. Not how I operate. No, I wish I could comment, but I would get in trouble.
She knows something we don't. She knows something.
No,
we...
yeah, but that's not a thing that I get off on at all. Actually, I'm a transparent person, which is why I love this. The to be able to just like, but you know, spoiler culture. I don't want to. You know, yeah. This is the safe space.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay, so after episode 3, Dan G says, it does make the world of Silos so fun that there are so many different conceivable ways people ended up in Silos. The possibilities dig deep into human myth and lore. This is what really good science fiction does. Yes, I agree. And he adds, Bernard, when bragging to Meadows about his speech, explain that he thought of it like a math problem. From my perspective, he solved the problem the way Data might, or even Binar might, approach a similar conundrum. And he's talking character names, so those are capital letters. So tinfoil hat theory still alive. So basically, Dan has previously said that he thought that his tinfoil hat theory is that Bernard is some sort of AI, and which Data and Binar are two, you know, AI character, or, you know, robot characters. So Luke's making skeptical faces.
It's not skeptical faces, but I just wonder whether this is like a massive double bluff, because my brain sort of automatically goes to Westworld whenever you give it half the opportunity. And sure. Of course, the Bernard character in Westworld is a host, is artificial intelligence. So, of course, actually, of course, that doesn't make... No, scratch that. That doesn't make sense, because Hugh Howey wrote the book before.
Before. Maybe they based Westworld on... No, I don't know. okay, so after episode 4 now, Keith Moser sent in an email. So it's... Sorry if you, so I actually got two emails on the same subject, so I'm going to read both of them, okay? So the first is from Keith Moser, says, sorry if you already covered this, but one thing I just realized after watching episode 4 and listening to your podcast, and maybe a season 1 episode would make this question moot, but how does the book deal with Walker's agoraphobia? Does she remain hidden away down below after passing along a message about good tape, or does the book also have Walker realize their affliction wasn't that big of a deal to, quote unquote, or paraphrase, there wasn't any excuse big enough to make them stay in their room. Thanks, Keith Moser, Allentown, PA, and hey!
I know Keith through the Academy of Death Racers, which is a group of fellow film nerds, and I guess I'm not really sure if I realized you were from Allentown before, but I guess I did, but
it's kind of not that far from where I grew up. And so Howard also wrote, firstly, I love your podcast as well as Doom Prophecy. Thank you, Howard. Thank you for your wonderful work and further opening up this world. In relation to Walker and her issue, I get your point that it all happens quickly, but in a show that has two similar characters in that way, there has to be a clear differentiation in how they are being presented. Walker left her apartment because of her deep love for Jules, whereas Solo has been Solo for however many years with no support network around him. So, Luke, I'll let you go first. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I get that it might be a kind of drag on the momentum of the story to have two characters going mm-hmm. through similar trauma at the same time. But I don't really buy that, because this is happening in two separate silos, two separate contexts. It may be happening at the same time, but like the email pointed out, it's happening under very different circumstances. And it's not that I object to Walker deciding to go out, deciding to engage with the world. Mm-hmm. It's what I object to is the fact that she seems to be doing this with minimal difficulty. Mm-hmm. And it's that conversation with Carla where I can't remember exactly how it goes, but she basically said that she decided not to be agoraphobic anymore, and it's just, right. No, that just doesn't sit right. That just doesn't sit right with me.
Yeah, I do think that they are different circumstances that the two are in, because, I mean, yeah, Solo's arguably had it worse, but to answer the question about the comparisons with the book, I got more into it and read some book passages on this in season 1, I guess episode 6 and 8 or something. Is that where the episodes where this came up? But yeah, so anyway, I did go deeper into this in season 1. But to summarize, basically Walker eventually did leave to go. It wasn't about the tape. It was to go and watch Jules cleaning. And then after that, he doesn't just retreat into his room, but he's still cautious. So even much later, you know, Jules notices, because Walker's a man in the books, but even much later, Jules notices that he finds like a kind of smaller space to exist in, you know, somewhere where he feels a little bit more protected rather than being out in the open in a crowd or something like that. So it's something that lingers, but he does get past it and is able to go out, but not walking up and down the silo. That's a different thing. And I see why they're doing this, because of that. They want to build that whole romance with McLean, which doesn't exist in the books. And I don't object to the romance with McLean.
And like I say, I don't have a problem with her being out. I don't have a problem with Walker in the show being out and about in the silo. Mm-hmm. I just wish they would acknowledge that this is difficult for.
Right.
That this is difficult for her.
Not like, I just decided it's silly to feel this way because, yeah.
Yeah, you don't, like I said in the episode, you don't logic yourself into having these issues, and you're not going to logic yourself out of them.
Right.
That's not the way it works.
And by contrast, Solo in the books, he was out before Juliet came. He had already started to venture out a little bit and explore, so he was a bit more comfortable on that front by the time she showed up. Okay, next up, Christina J. After episode 4, she says about Meadows, I don't think at any point she wanted to die. She wanted her freedom to choose what fate came next, and if that fate led to death, she was fine. I agree she isn't a hero per se, but she isn't a villain. Was she neutered all those years in judicial, or chose to be oblivious to it all in rebellion to not hold up what she believes is a fraudulent government? Yeah, I'm with you on these thoughts about Meadows. I really liked Meadows. It was really sad to see her go. She continues, she seemed genuinely upset and surprised Bernard would kill her, but she seemed to understand why his brain was conditioned to think this was the right choice. The aftermath of that decision will be interesting because, as you pointed out, it was not his original plan. He may have actually been toying with the idea of stepping outside the order, but I'm pretty sure the pact doesn't prevent anyone from going out. Everything about that decision would have been in his favor, especially if it failed. It would prove his point. Yeah, I mean, I guess in that case, like so if he let her go out and let it fail, that would mean, I guess, that he gave her the bad tape. And then I suppose from his perspective, wouldn't it be worse to let her die like that than, you know, in his living room with some poison and watching VR?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we'll obviously never know what Meadows really wanted or what her motivations really were. Mm-hmm. Now, but I agree she's neither a hero nor a villain. I think what made her interesting as a character was that she was marching to the beat of her own drum. She had her own reasons and her own logic for doing what she was doing.
Right.
I kind of hope, I doubt we'll get it this season, but I kind of hope in future seasons we might see some flashbacks of when she was Bernard's shadow.
Mm-hmm.
And exactly what happened. And also, I'd kind of, just because Bernard is going through some stuff this season, I'd kind of like those flashbacks just to see Bernard happy and free. It would be nice.
For a moment, and then she disappears for 4 days.
Yeah. It'd be to see a softer side of Bernard.
Yeah.
Because I think that's one of the things that Meadows does as a character is humanize Bernard a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah. Yeah, and I like that she definitely is there to help humanize Bernard a bit, but also she's very much her own character who, the reason why I liked her so much is that she thought for herself and she said what she thought. And I just think I know in that world it's more dangerous, but I think in this world we still have far too few people who think for themselves and say what they think. So I like that about her. Okay, so Christina continues, Luke, you seem stuck on Bernard, waffling after his initial speech of ingenuity, but Meadows flat out said he's a crap politician and she didn't expect him to be competent, which to me implies he isn't as good at politics, but is good at what IT was great at, subterfuge. I think Bernard knew he was about to go through the rebellion phase of the silo and sought her out for the fact she is better at navigating the true situation than he is. Because they don't have a mayor, he's out himself in two roles. So what do you think that, I guess, this is about you saying that, you know, why Bernard was, that his speech, I guess, was a fluke.
No, I'm going to push back a little bit here. I don't think I don't think Bernard's speech was a fluke. I mean, I was surprised by how effective a public speaker he was, given the very stilted eulogy he gave in season one for Mayor Johns. I think the problem with that speech is it created the obvious question of, if you have this experimental new tape, well, why aren't you sending more people out to explore the outside? That was an inevitable, foreseeable, predictable consequence of what he said in that speech. So I think Bernard is quite good at the tactics of politics, the getting from point A to point B, the surviving the immediate, the solving the immediate problem bit. But what he couldn't do, or what he didn't do, was think through the implications of what he'd said. Because, like, if Knox hadn't made the demand for, like, somebody to go out and explore, somebody else would have. It's the inevitable logical consequence of what he says.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I agree with you. Yep. Christina continues, Sims ended his chances at Shadow the minute he forced the Meadow situation that Bernard will eventually have time to reflect on and get angrier about. He used that man's first name. Having no second in command isn't the same as someone able to put the silo above himself. Bernard just made the ultimate sacrifice, which Sims would never, thus not going to be a Shadow. But who taught Sims to be ruthless for power? It's kind of poetic. So you think Bernard taught Sims to be ruthless, but this also makes him not a good candidate?
No. Nobody taught Robert Sims to be ruthless. That is genetic.
Well, like, I mean, we can talk about nature and nurture. I think we got some examples of nurture in season one when he was talking about his dad worked in the janitor's closet. So this is where he got this job from, it seems. And he was saying about how this kid was mean to him in school. And then suddenly one day the kid was just transferred to the deep or something, or way down the silo.
Yeah, like that. Like Robert Sims was a ruthless SOB long before he met Bernard Holland.
Well, I think that's what Bernard saw in him.
Yes. Yeah, I think it is.
But as a tool rather than, you know,
as a
not someone he wants to tell all the secrets to.
Yeah.
Yeah. She continues, why tell Lucas the truth? So that he has hope in the darkness and a motive. Oh, so this is about Meadows and Lucas's final conversation before she... and they talk about the stars. So why tell Lucas the truth? So that he has hope in the darkness and a motive and information now to know he was on the right path. Imagine your girl went out to clean. You're sentenced to what is a horrifying fate you're not expected to survive a year of, but then you're told you're not crazy or dumb, or what was intuition is now proven fact. Your whole morale changes because now you have a drive to know more and not be defeated. I like that perspective, that maybe she told him things to give him a purpose to keep going in the mines.
Maybe. I think more though, it's just she was, you know, it was game reaching out to game, you know. Curiosity is something that's discouraged in the society of the silo. So when you see it, you want to encourage it and probe it and see how far he actually got. And give him some reward for that as well.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think the only person she could really talk to was Bernard. And obviously they weren't in too good of speaking terms quite a while after she ditched him. But even with him, she couldn't, you know, as she said, him trying to think outside the box is like trying to imagine a color he's never seen. Christina says, I love Common. But his acting takes me out of a lot of scenes. The speech actually made me want to turn off what was up until that point, a fantastic episode. Yikes. Do you agree?
No, I'm sorry. Hard.
You love Common.
Hard disagree there. I think the problem you might have there is Robert Sims as a character, not the way Common is portraying him. Because Sims is a very... I think I get what you're saying. He doesn't have, like, massive emotional range. Mm-mm. But that's because Sims doesn't have massive emotional range.
Yeah.
And I think there are some scenes with Camille, both in these episodes and in previous and subsequent episodes, where we do see, you know, that still waters run quite deep with him. But I can maybe see what the issue is in that, yes, the way Common plays him, he doesn't have an enormous emotional range. He's quite stoic, quite sort of po-faced. But I think that's Sims' character, not the way Common is portraying him, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Yeah, and I have to say that they have translated the character quite well from the book, the characterization, but then expanded him a lot. So he actually does seem so in the last couple episodes, I feel like, well, we're going to talk about episode 7 after this, and I was going to say something about his depth in that.
Also, I want that trench coat.
They should
start selling those trench coats.
I know. Where's the merch?
Yeah.
And then Christina ends in the realm of Noxie being Foxy, I say. Christina adds, side note, Nox is increasingly beginning to distract my loins with his sexual appeal. And I did write back and I told her to, yeah, gird her loins for episode 6. Watch out. Foxy Noxy incoming. Okay. After episode 4, Mark from Never Mind the Music says, speaking of Leo pointing me at the appearance of the harmonium in this episode, a few weeks ago on our podcast, we reminisced about my old band Dream Hydra. Strange as it is, I actually play a harmonium on a couple of songs on that album. It's a different type, though, a hand-pumped version, sometimes called the Indian harmonium. This is what happens when one of your bandmates has random instruments lying around. That's really cool.
That is very cool.
He and your uncle can jam.
I don't think my uncle has played a harmonium in at least 25 years, so it might be a little bit awkward.
Hey, apparently Solo hadn't either, and he just picked it right back up.
That's true.
All right. Aaron K says, oh, we're still after episode 4, so another host from our network of Radioactive Rambling. I'm super impressed with how this season is going and loving the coverage. I'm glad the pod is in the same place I am about the character choices for Walker. Other than that one glaring complaint, Apple is once again showing its sci-fi skills and delivering a story full of intrigue, drama, and vicious cycles with some great messages about the danger of a ruling class that keeps a monopoly on information. And Steve Zahn is so good in this. I see so much of his White Lotus character in Solo. Did you watch White Lotus?
No, that's one of the many things that's on the ever-expanding list of things that I need to watch but haven't got around to yet.
Oh, a strong recommendation for White Lotus. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, each season is its own story, but they exist in the same world and there's a couple characters that overlap, but yeah.
Okay.
Sub-Zero says after episode 4, not sure if anyone here watched Treem. Steve Zahn was great in that show, and apparently this inspired Sub-Zero to buy real estate. So, and Imperator Curiosa says it was amazing and no one watched it about Treem. The Wire is a masterpiece, but Treem should get more love. Treem has long been on my list, but I haven't even made it through The Wire yet. So maybe I should just try Treem first. Or Treme.
I know Treme.
I'm pronouncing it wrong. I've actually been there in New Orleans to that neighborhood, but I'm pronouncing it wrong.
I watched like half of one episode. It wasn't bad, but I just haven't had a chance. But how have you not, like, stop what you did? Let's stop the podcast right now and go and watch What's Left of The Wire. Like, it's the best TV show of all time.
Is it? It's not for me. I watched the first season, but I will go back and watch the rest. But I think I'm going to watch Sopranos first because that's another glaring omission. And I think I might be more into that. I think the first season of The Wire is really quality television. I just, you know, like, first of all, where are the space witches? Like, let's think about who we're talking to here. But yeah. The Wire is very quality, and I want to watch the whole thing. I just keep putting other things in front of it because it's not necessarily my genre, you know?
Okay, the first four seasons are as good as television gets. The fifth season, meh. The fifth season, it kind of jumps the shark a little bit for me. But anyway, we're getting off topic.
I mean, yeah, if I get to season four, I'm going to watch the whole thing. But
yeah.
But I did watch Dallas Buyers Club. That was a good movie. And Fur Elisa points out that Steve Zahn's also in that. So I recommend Dallas Buyers Club to anyone who hasn't seen it.
Okay, Steve Zahn is in a lot more stuff than I thought he was.
Yeah, he's a pretty prolific actor, yeah.
Okay.
You know what? This is a good place to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more through episodes 4 and 5 of Silo. Be right back.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com. VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.
Okay, after episode 4, Davy Mack says, some really great character scenes in this one. I loved the Solo/Juliet stuff, and I was so anxious when he kept talking, waiting for her to snap at him, but she handled it much better than I thought she would. One other detail I really liked was Jules questioning Solo's story when the ages didn't line up, when he was talking about Lapis, because I was doing the same thing. And the Bernard/Meadows death scene was just so damn good, really bummed she won't be in the show anymore.
Like I say, I'm hoping for some flashbacks at some
right.
point.
Any thoughts on the Solo story and the ages not lining up?
Yeah, Solo is an enigmatic character. There's a lot going on there that we don't know.
Right.
And he's this really interesting combination of the childlike and the sort of, and somebody that knows a lot more about the world than Juliet.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with everything everybody said about Steve Zahn's performance, because it can't be an easy part to play, balancing off this intelligence that Solo clearly has with the kind of isolated childlike quality that he has as well.
Right. Right. Yeah, and I have to say that, yeah, Juliet did actually handle him better than I expected. She didn't punch him like she did Cooper, so.
She can't just go around randomly punching people, Alicia.
No. I didn't think she should punch Cooper, but apparently he says it saved his life until he died later anyway. But moving on. after episode 4, Rebecca Fan says, in the silo, this is Tim Robbins' episode. He has that true believer villain role down pat, and what's worse is that he's right to want to keep everyone from storming the door. There are so many components to his character. Rarely do we see a villain portrayed as vulnerable or awkward. Tanya Moody as Meadows is in that scene. Amazing. What did they do? How did they lose this world? I'm saddened by Meadows' death, as she was one of my few gray characters in the show, especially now that Simsnard has gone full-on evil. Juliet and Solo continued to be the best awkward duo in the show. I love their chemistry and the pitfalls they encounter from one another simply trying to communicate. I think there is a breakthrough when Juliet realizes what Solo is going on about with the harmonium. Points for Rebecca in that scene. With only one expression, she continues to say so much. holy shit, this guy's right. He's got more going on than I thought.
Yeah, I mean, I've said it before. Rebecca Ferguson has an amazingly expressive face.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Tim Robbins has got this you know, true believer evil character down pat. I just think I just think Tim Robbins. You could give Tim Robbins anything to play, and he would give you a good performance.
Sure. Sure, but I mean, yeah. This is a good, particularly good example, I think, of the of the true believer trope. Yeah, because it is rare enough that you see a villain portrayed as vulnerable or awkward, and I guess that is, like, I'm not going to say I like Bernard, but that's something I like about the characterization. I guess
I don't like Bernard, but I do, right. I do get where he's coming from, which is which is unusual for a villain.
Right, because he is legitimately, like, he's not wrong. He actually is often more right than the people we like better. But
yeah,
he handles it all wrong, but he's also set up to handle it all wrong because
yes,
we know we're getting hints now of stuff the Order says, and it's like, what? Even Meadows is like, what? All right. Ashley S. says, again, we're still talking about episode 4. I'm dying to know who/what the legacy is and when/how does one sit with them/it. It implies there's yet another layer to the power structure, but somehow Bernard has no idea what Meadows' experience with the legacy was. Maybe somewhere in the order, it stipulates a process to quote-unquote see the legacy when someone becomes a judge or IT head. Does the same happen with the other departments? Why? And just to say, I would assume we're not going to comment on the legacy.
I really want to, but I can't.
we're going to talk about the stuff after this when we do episode 7. But just to say, yeah, I think that in general, with the head of IT, that position is different from every other position in the silo. So anything that's true for the head of IT is probably not true for the rest of the silo.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Ashley continues, also, what did Salvador Quinn know 140 years ago as IT head? My theory is whatever the message that Meadows decoded says must have led to the rebellion. Maybe the IT head, having the knowledge in that message, threatens the very silo's existence, and Meadow knows she cannot allow that to happen again by way of Bernard. I noticed that he said she likes his... Oh, yeah, and this is about... and then the last part is about Juliet and Solo. And she says, I noticed that he said that Lapis liked his blue eyes, plural. So that means he hasn't always had two different colored eyes. Then, immediately after in Silo 18, we see Teddy's eye. So was Solo also injured during the Silo 17 rebellion? Whose side was he on, and what exactly happened? I think I'm more intrigued by what happened to 17 than to 18 at this point, but it's a close call now with this Salvador Quinn information. So yeah, thoughts on Solo and his differently colored eyes? I think injury is a good guess.
Injury is a good guess. More,
although they are two different colors of blue, I guess, but yeah, still, he's sensitive about it.
More and more, I'm leaning towards the idea that Solo was put into the vault as a child, or perhaps more accurately, a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, he has adopted Solo's identity for reasons I can't really guess at.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Much to be revealed this season.
Yeah.
Jean says, after episode 4, Jean being co-host on the Lorehounds, says, Bernard and Mr. and Mrs. Sims are atop my list of evil. I mean, that was seriously despicable what they did, and particularly the Sims as they seek to get out and hold on to power. Bernard being tender and caring as Meadows died, both by his and in his hands, was stomach-turning for me.
Yeah. Like, yeah, this whole justification that Bernard, that, you know, this is something he had to do. No, yeah. Bernie, you really didn't have to do this. You chose to do this.
But of course, he's going to be in such deep denial that, you know, Sims gives him an outlet to place that blame on rather than himself. Like, poor Mia, he was forced. I was forced. But, you know, there was discussion on the Discord also about people saying, like, wasn't he already planning this? And I don't know that I think he was already planning this, but I think he always knew it had to be an option. And I think there's some sense of relief in being able to blame it on Sims, but also that means his anger is getting funneled there.
Yes. I think the nature of Bernard is he has contingency plans for his contingency plans. But that doesn't mean that he meant to do it or that he wants to do it.
Can I ask you a question? Do you think Bernard would take his own life if he thought it would help the silo?
Yes.
Yeah. So you think he's a real true believer?
Yes, I think he would.
I think you're not wrong there. Yeah. So episode 4 again, Paul Kent says, Solo and Jules, like busy mother and hyperactive child, perfect acting, Zana's brilliant. The show needed some light relief from the evilness in Silos 18. Yeah, Solo's is good relief from that stuff. Yeah, we were all like Solo at his mental age. Jules doesn't give a damn about elephants or lions, just wants to keep fixing or making stuff. In many ways, her and Solo are very much alike. They need their projects.
Yeah, I don't think Solo has a mental age. I mean, he knows a lot. It was Solo's idea with the harmonium. I don't think he has any kind of learning disability or any kind of developmental issue.
No, I don't think. Well, social development, obviously, but just because he was so isolated. So that's where it's his social mental age, I suppose, because. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
It's been decades since he interacted with other people.
Yeah, that's true.
And it seems like his last direct interactions were contentious based on the dead bodies outside his door and the message on the wall.
That's one way of putting it, with two corpses lying in the.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think that went well.
No.
So episode 4 again, Marine D says, great episode. Knox is redeemed. It is horrible how they got set up. I hope they have more apples. That was quite a last supper with Bernard and Meadows and VR goggles from 2018. I agree Meadows should have seen his betrayal coming though. The Lucas scene with Meadows was curious. Maybe she wants him to see something in the mines. Maybe we'll see more of Meadows in flashbacks, like what she did find on the hard drive, and where did she go for 4 days, to the mines, or was she somewhere gazing at the stars? The rebellion begins. And then the VR for Bernard is the equivalent of the drugs for Gloria. That's an interesting perspective. I see that. Everyone has their numbing things, you know, what they turn to escape.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I would say in addition to that is we do see Bernard using alcohol as a crutch throughout the show as well.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not saying he doesn't use the VR headset as a means of escape.
Right, but he also uses alcohol.
Yeah, it's not the only one.
Right. Maybe not to the extent that Meadows was, but yeah, they spent a lot of time on his drinking. Nancy says, also for the 2018 date on the VR goggles may be the most recent history relic we've seen so far in real life. The dates on other relics, like the Pez, could have been from the 60s through 80s, though the size of the hard drive is relatively small, so possibly newer. Also, another specific Earth location with Costa Rica. And yeah, the hard drive, it seems to just be an old silo hard drive because it has a cleaning video, so. It's something they were using inside the silo after the apocalypse.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, of course, this was all before Nancy saw Lucas come back up and talk to Bernard. So, Yeah, we still have to see. After episode 5, Nancy said, also, it was interesting that the HR page seemed to have staff photos, but everywhere else there are only paintings of people. And yeah, we got that little bit of exposition, very easy to miss in season 1, where basically they said there is a camera where people get ID photos taken. They use actual photos for IDs, but nobody has cameras at home.
Yeah.
After episode 4, Lestou says, there's so many different factions going on in this show. You've got Mechanical, the Mids, Bernard, Sims, and whomever else seems to come around. Sooner or later, don't they need to coalesce into us versus them? Wouldn't it be interesting if Sims and Bernard were on opposite sides? Like, well, Luke keeps predicting they're going to kill each other, so...
No, one of them is going to kill the other.
One of them is going to kill the other. Sorry.
Yeah, one of them is going to come
so
out.
So you predict one will survive this season and one will not.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Her royal bubbliness says, also after episode 4, Solo is so cute. He's probably not seen anyone to talk to in years, and that's why he just is rambling on and on. Bless him. Alicia, are you happy and satisfied now? Your boy Lucas is finally here. Haha, look at that beautiful face. And yes, I did. And okay, so we're going to get back to her royal bubbliness's message. But first, I wanted to say that I also was tagged in a new piece of artwork from Jeremy on Blue Sky. Now, we talked about in a previous episode how Jeremy did a drawing of me walking in with George and the Pez. And now we have a follow-up of Lucas in the mines. And again, we have the woman's arm opening the door that says, creak. And then we see Lucas in a yellow jumpsuit chained to the wall, pickaxe slung over his shoulder. And he says, what brings a nice girl like you to a mine like this?
I haven't seen that yet.
No, yeah, this is on Blue Sky. And there's like something crumpled up on the floor. What do you think that paper is crumpled up on the floor? Or is that your signature, Jeremy? Maybe. Yeah.
Okay.
But thank you. I love this. Keep them coming.
Yeah, now we just need Danny to show up.
Right, exactly. Where's Danny?
Yeah.
Okay, and so her royal bubbliness continues. Oh my God, didn't expect to cry. Never knew a discussion about the discovery of the planet with childlike wonder and curiosity would make me cry. It's just really beautiful, and it's some of the wonders of this Earth that we sometimes take for granted. I didn't realize I missed him until I saw him. He's just so genuine and full of light and a spark. That world doesn't deserve him. He thinks differently and has something new to offer. Can see why Juliet liked him. When Solo was worried about someone else getting into the vault, the camera angles weren't helping. It kept looking like someone was watching them. I held my breath until he finally entered the vault too. I was paranoid with Solo. So yeah, again, another plus point in the cinematography that it continues to be superlative for the show.
It does.
Meadows and Bernard, the little looking down. Oh, yeah. The little looking down when being asked for dinner. Okay, side eye. By the ending, I was just pissed at myself that I forgot who Bernard was for a hot minute because of a little stammer shoe. Now I want Bernard to die. Side eye, snort emoji.
Well, yeah. Don't hold back, your royal bubbliness. Tell us what you really think.
I mean, I think Meadows must have felt the same, that she like was probably like, fuck, he poisoned me. I forgot for a moment who this man was.
Yeah, I still want to know, did he poison the mushrooms or were the mushrooms poisonous? It's a small detail, but I think you can read it either way.
Yeah. Yep. Okay, we are switching to episode 5 now. Switching gears. Okay, Brandon wrote in after episode 5 and said, hey Alicia and Luke, Brandon here, huge fan, first time writer. Oh yay, we're so glad to hear from you. He points out that we've had some contact on Blue Sky recently, at STHA Brando or Brondo, and he says, my introverted self has finally decided to communicate with y'all. I thought this was the best episode of the entire series thus far. I agree. The two Siler stories are tying together nicely. Bernard is a menace to society who isn't as smart as he thinks, needs someone to make coffee for him and fix the hard drive. And I thought the small bits of acting this episode between Julia and Solo were top tier. Ian Glenn had me tearing up with that monologue. My one gripe with the episode, how is Judicial so incompetent at tracking? The first couple of times Mechanical got by them, I understood. But then it just becomes a bit of a joke that they just keep running by groups of raiders. Ha ha. What do you think?
Yeah, I think this is kind of one of those things where I absolutely agree with you, Brandon, but I've kind of decided to let it go on the grounds that it is a TV. It is a TV show. But yeah, I do get what you're saying. It's even worse when you consider that it's an enclosed environment.
Right.
There are only so many places they can go.
I mean, I think that one thing that they added from the books that kind of explains this a bit better is Amundsen.
This is true. But I do want somebody to do like a supercut of all the scenes on the stairs and set it to the Benny Hill theme music. I think that would be funny.
Yeah, you could definitely do that. So Brandon concludes, as someone who hasn't read the Wool series, my bold prediction, Juliet and Solo will pump the water out of the silo they're in, and the rebels in the main silo will end up with Juliet and Solo. Bernard will discover the silos are connected too late as the people start flooding into the other silo. Cheers from Ottawa, Canada, Brandon. What do you think of that prediction?
Really nice to have you on board, Brandon. Thanks for the email. And you know what? I can see that happening. Not something that I'd thought about before, but yes, now that you say that, that would be a great ending to episode 10. That would be a great cliffhanger to leave the series on. So I am on board with that.
Yep. Can't say anything because books, but yeah, okay. I mean, but yeah, I do. There are so many differences between the show and the books that I am wondering if this is going to end like the end of the first book, or what if it even ended like the middle of the third book. Readers know what I'm talking about, but yeah, it's got my head reeling too. So I'm not really sure where this is going, because the changes too change things. So I'm like, well, how can things happen that way if, you know, but sometimes yeah, they bring it back in line.
It's like the cumulative, like the ripple effects of the changes they're making.
Exactly.
It might be quite small, but it can have big consequences.
Right. And there's some quite big changes, actually. So.
Okay.
Yeah. But then sometimes, you know, like they'll introduce a character like Meadow and you're like, how can this possibly proceed as planned? And then Meadow dies. And you're like, oh, well, that's how. So yeah, you never know what's going to happen. Simon Young says after episode 5, great Will Shift Dust episode. Thank you, Simon. I'm reflecting how much the different characters' relationship with the pact is an analogy for religion, which makes me wonder, is Bernard a sincere but deluded true believer, or a cynical narcissist, or both? So yeah, second person who's bringing up this true believer. But I think, yeah, when I asked you about whether he would kill himself for the cause, I think we agree he's a true believer,
yes.
But also a cynical narcissist.
I think he's cynical about people. This is the thing. He has a deep sort of passion for preserving society, but he doesn't actually like the people in that society. And that is like a trait of true believers. You look at people like, you know, you look at people like Mao or Lenin or any number of Nazis. They have this very exalted idea of the people, you know, as a mass, as an idea, but they don't actually care about human beings as individuals. They're just pieces to be moved about the board. And I think this is true of Bernard. He sees the people in the silo as abstractions, as things to be protected and improved and managed, but not as individuals that he can relate to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you can be both a believer and a cynic. at sort of different levels of analysis, at sort of depending on what level of analysis you're looking at his character from.
Yeah, and I do agree he's probably a bit of a narcissist. I think that one of the things that really rubbed him the wrong way with Meadows is that she is clearly, I mean, I don't want to say she's smarter than him because there's different types of intelligence, but she is a more creative thinker than him.
Yeah, and I think she sees...
More visionary?
I think she sees Bernard in a way that nobody else does. Because she was his shadow, because she's been let in on the secrets of IT. She can look at Bernard in a way that nobody else in the silo can.
Right. But is that good, or does that make him feel seen, or does that make him feel seen in a bad way?
A bit of both. A little from column A, a little from column B.
Yeah. Yeah, let's be honest. It was never going to work out between them.
But I really wanted it to.
I know. And if anyone survived, that's... I wanted it to be her, but... All right. So Uriel says after episode 5, this was a solid but so heartbreaking and infuriating as each episode gets more gripping than the next. All I'll say is that I legitimately feel sorry for Jules / Solo for all the hell they've been through, especially Rebecca Ferguson and Steve Zahn's performances. I just want to give poor Jules a sweet hug, crying emoji. Aside from the Jules and Solo stuff, I'm slowly starting to root for Billings and Jules' colleagues at Mechanical who want to finish what Jules started, while I'm slowly hating on IT, especially for their own lies. Please come the fuck back, Jules. Sigh emoji, mad emoji.
Yeah, I don't think Jules is a hugger. You have to know Jules pretty well before you're going to get a hug out of her. She's not. Yeah.
We've seen her hug like Shirley and Martha and maybe, I guess, her dad. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but so the thing about what's going on in 18, though, is that, yes, of course, we're rooting for the people of Mechanical, but if they got their way... I mean, okay, I want them to get their way in the sense where they are like, let's go do some research outside. Like, yes, this is great. But you don't want them now that, yeah, you don't want them to like hear about the green stuff and go running out the door. And in those cases, Bernard is correct in stopping that.
Yeah, but I think this is the difference between Silo 17 and Silo 18. It's not like Mechanical is saying, let's pop open the top of the silo and let's all go outside. They're just saying, if you've got the good tape, why can't we go for a bit of a look round? And I mean, maybe that's how it started in Silo 17 as well. Like, not maybe with a good tape, but maybe it started with a more incremental set of demands. We don't know. But to me, it's not like Knox in particular wants to like overthrow the order in the silo. He just wants to negotiate. He just wants to be taken seriously by Bernard and the people in the up top. And it's not like they don't have a legitimate set of demands. It's not like they have an unachievable set of demands. I think Bernard is making the situation worse by just treating them as outlaws. I think if you actually sat down with Knox and Shirley and the other people from Mechanical, you could at this point hammer out an agreement that everybody could live with. But that's not what Bernard, that's not where Bernard's head is at. But I do think it's where Shirley and Knox's heads are at.
But then the problem is, you know, so obviously in normal circumstances, just letting them go out and look around outside would be the best thing for everyone. It would calm the nerves and it would, you know, it would progress the silence of the silo. But obviously they can't let them do that because they can't let them, they would see the other silos and that would be a big problem. But they can't tell them that's why they can't do that. So what's the way out there?
Would seeing the other silos? I mean, it would be a shock. It would be an upending of the system. But would it really be that terrible?
I mean, to Bernard, to the heads of the silos, they clearly have something in the order that says we can't let the Silos know about each other.
Yeah.
So we don't know exactly why yet, but all we know is that that is like a definite we cannot let this happen thing.
Yeah, so maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there isn't a negotiable settlement there. But that's certainly what Nox and Shirley as kind of right. de facto leaders of the Down Deep want. They're not. Right. They're not looking to overthrow the Silo, and they're certainly not looking to run things. They just want a bit of respect.
Right. But yeah, so they're not wrong to think that's a reasonable demand. But since the powers that be can't tell them why that's not a reasonable demand, then the only thing that that Bernard thinks they can do, I suppose that the order tells them to do, is paint them as the bad guys so that people stop listening to their questions.
Yeah. So yeah, it goes back to what we said before, and I'm sure we'll say it again. Clear communication, people.
Right. always.
Always.
Zatuichi says, Bernard should have picked Camille for his shadow. She's got the stuff to do all the stuff. Is she diabolical? Well, yes and yes. And the TCS agrees and says, she seems like a good shadow. I wonder if somehow that pact quote on the role of women was inserted to tell us why she's not considered, even though clearly women can lead. Maybe that's not the path she is choosing to walk. Yeah, because Meadows is a woman and she was going to be the shadow.
And so was Mayor Johns as well. So.
Right, but she wasn't a shadow of the head of IT. She was the mayor.
No, but as mayor, she did, I think, have some.
Yeah,
some
but that's a figurehead role. It's not, yeah.
It's yeah. not as powerful.
It's true. She has to lead the people inside the silo. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So stashing Shirley and Nox was quite the power move to stick it to Bernard. She's a woman behind the scenes indeed. Although for a sec, I wondered if there's not yet another source of power in the silo system? Question mark. I think ultimately she was just trying to help Rob. So yeah, what do you think? Do you think she's just, went behind his back to help him in his position, trying to regain his old position?
I mean, there are plans within plans within plans here. And I don't want to say too much because we do find out a bit more in subsequent episodes what she was thinking.
Yeah, but the Camille, I mean, it seems like what she wants is complex. But I think ultimately it does come back to, like, I do believe she loves her husband and her son, and those are the most important things to her.
Yes. But also, if she could be like the wife of the head of IT, that wouldn't be too bad either, you know?
Yeah. But I wonder if she just wants to be. Yeah, I wonder why she wouldn't go for that role herself. I suppose maybe he lucked into it because of his background.
I guess. But I think Camille lacks something that Meadows had, which is curiosity. Like, I couldn't see Camille having that conversation about the stars. And I think that one of the things you need as head of IT is, and I've got to be a bit careful what I say here, is an ability to question. It's an ability to understand the way things work, but also why they work that way.
Mm-hmm. You have to, I mean, yeah, it's about, especially, you know, we see Bernard going through what's going on here, and it's about, you have to be able to think on your feet and synthesize a lot of different factors and information. Yeah. So maybe Camille, she's smart enough, but I think you're right about the curiosity. Like, if someone pointed out the stars to her, she would be like, are the stars going to feed my son? Then I don't care, you know?
Yeah, what have the stars done for me recently?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I do somehow like her, though. Like, not as much as Meadows, because she's got, you know, she's a woman who thinks for herself, but she's shady. She's shady. She should not be keeping this stuff from her. If she's supposed to have a true partnership with her husband, she should not be keeping this stuff from him. Yeah. All right, this is a good place for another pause. And when we get back, we're going to continue with the last round of our feedback. We've got some good thoughts on both episodes 4 and 5 incoming in just a moment. Okay, so Doof71 says about episode 5, super tense episode this week and some really interesting diversions from the book. Bernard making Sims judge was a massive FU, and Camille's power move was a great reaction. The crisis in the silo is highlighting all of Bernard's weaknesses. The more he tries to keep a tight grip, the more things are spiraling out of control. One thing I bumped a little on was Jules confronting Solo. Whilst it's consistent with her overall approach, it didn't feel organic in the moment. I felt the hand of the writers there. Minor niggle, though, as poor Jules is not a well girl. That wound looks very gnarly. Yeah. Ooh. Her arm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Bernard making Sims judge, definitely a massive FU.
Definitely.
Hmm. Nancy says, so after episode 4, Nancy said, I almost started crying for Jules. And Nancy, by the way, is 2 kids, 2 dogs on Discord. And she says, after episode 4, I almost started crying for Jules when she described how she felt fear and anticipated death with every footstep when outside the silo. So good. And the surprise with the knife. I clocked it in the earlier scene, then tried to figure out what he was going to do. Cut off her face like the faceless men? Listening to the podcast now, but I'm stopping so I don't forget to send this theory. I think Bernard won't have Sims as his IT backup because Sims has a wife and family, so his allegiance to the silo will always be suspect. He showed this in season 1 when he had judicial troops escort his family to their apartment. So this leads me to think Meadows wanted a relationship and Bernard knew he could not divide his allegiance between the silo and a woman and do what needs to be done as IT director. So obviously this was written before Sims got verbally disqualified for the whole Meadows incident. But what do you think of that Bernard stopped himself from having a relationship with Meadows as like a mirror to Sims is too close to his wife, and Bernard didn't want that with Meadows because Bernard knew he would always have to put the silo first?
Maybe.
I think it makes total sense.
I think it's clear that Bernard loved Meadows and that Meadows felt something for Bernard.
Mm-hmm.
And like, if you are the head of IT, the only person you can have a relationship with is your shadow. So there is an interesting question about which came first. I'm not sure. I can certainly see where that email is coming from. I really think we need to know where Meadows went for those 4 days.
Yeah, they teased it. They have to answer that question.
Yeah.
After episode 5, Nancy says, I think Camille did what she did so Sims' replacement would not be able to catch, quote-unquote, the murderers and be successful. Yeah, I agree. Absolutely, it was to make Sims look good. I love these deviations from the books. Keeps us on our toes. We had to move back from Jules and Silo and Solo to get the excellent plot and character development back in our home silo. Remember, this series is 10 episodes. Thank you, Apple TV, for investing in great TV. So yeah, she's urging patience for people who want the answers in the mid-season point. Which, yeah, fair. Fair to both parties. Jumba Rooney says, after episode 4, Steve Zahn is doing an incredible job portraying a man-child who grew up alone since he was a child. My guess is Solo was Russell's kid, and maybe Russell was teaching him and guiding him towards becoming his shadow. Then when the rebellion happened, probably officially declared him his shadow right before he went out to check for survivors or something. Every episode has been doing a great job answering one mystery and setting up another. Love it. What do you think about the Russell's kid theory?
Yeah, like I said earlier on, I'm leaning towards the idea that Solo was a teenager when he was up as either a child or I think a teenager in order to make the timeline add up when he was sort of placed in the vault.
Well, we don't know exactly what the timeline of the rebellion is. We know that it was at least 25 years because it was before Meadows was Bernard's shadow. So it was at least 25 years, but that doesn't mean it wasn't longer.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. But yeah, I'm definitely leaning towards the idea that during the rebellion, Solo was a child or a teenager.
Okay. And after episode 5, Chumbaruni says, I had a feeling Bernard would fuck Sims over somehow. Only a matter of time before Sims either makes a move against Bernard or vice versa. Yeah. For me, the most interesting part of the story to try and parse after this episode is trying to figure out who exactly Bernard will want to make his shadow moving forward. This is definitely the question. I'm thinking it won't be Sims, Camille, or Billings because of their commitments to their families over the silo as a whole. Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's a good point on Billings as well. So that doesn't leave many options. Either Sims replacement Amundsen, that was Alicia making that sound, or Lucas Kyle. Out of those two, I'm starting to think it's going to be Lucas after today's episode. Not Amundsen with the stapler. He's never.
You are never going to forgive him for that stapler.
I mean, actually, I thank him because it's a joke that keeps on giving. So Chumbaruni continues, rebuilding the hard drive will earn Bernard's trust, talking about Lucas. Then Bernard will ask for more help with different things, which will eventually lead to him just making Lucas his shadow. If Sims makes a play at Bernard, it could just expedite this process too. Also beginning to think that maybe Meadows giving Lucas more information about the stars wasn't really about trying to stoke the down deep with further dreams of the outside world, but to enlighten him a little bit and get him into the headspace that he is smart and that he can be someone who makes a significant impact to the future of the silo. So this is very similar to what we were talking about before. I think that would be a stretch for the writers, but I'm beginning to see it in hindsight. I don't think it's a stretch. I don't know. Doesn't seem like the down deep is going to need much more to stoke their fire. So just wondering what exactly that confession about the stars to Lucas was really about. If Meadows is so smart, like everyone keeps saying, even though I'm not really buying that based on what we've seen. Oh, damn. Yeah, I mean, I think it's what Luke and I were saying personally earlier, that she just doesn't have people to talk about these big ideas about the universe with.
Yeah, and I'm not saying anything more about Lucas Kyle because
no.
Yeah, zip it.
Yeah. Anyway, another great episode. Can't imagine Juliet is going to die, but more so thinking that this is her ticket inside of Solo's vault. Excited to see how it all plays out. P.S. Also, as someone who designs fall protection for a living, Knox and Shirley should be fucking dead. That winch cable would have bisected them cleanly when they hit the bottom. That looks like 10-ish stories at least, and a fall of even 1 to 2 stories under those circumstances would have killed them both. So, yeah, okay, fair.
Yeah, I can't really argue with that. Like,
no. It designs fall protection for a living. Oh, that's cool. For like stunt people or something? I'm very curious.
Yeah, send us another email. I'm going to need more information on that.
Yeah. Skatuni, not to be confused with Chumbaruni, Skatuni says, I was worried going into this season that Juliet being so separate from the main silo would make me lose interest in the story there, but the show has handled that part of the story very well, at least in terms of expanding on minor characters and building relationships between them, not just between them and Juliet. Yeah, I really like that. I like how, especially in this season, we see the team ups of, oh, no, I'm trying to not say team up that haven't teamed up yet, but we see some interesting team ups. Juliet's story has become a little dull for me at this point, and now it will presumably slow down even more for a main character suffers fever from a wound plot. I would say don't worry too much about that, but that's all I'm going to say. Ian Glenn is so good in every scene too. Always look forward to him appearing. I'm a little confused by what Juliet figured out at the end of the episode. Just that Solo had taken on the name of the real IT Shadow? Not read the books, but I thought it was clear from the previous episode that he was not the real IT Shadow, given it was revealed he was 11 to 12 at the time of the rebellion. He denied it in a very unconvincing way. Yeah, I mean, what she basically, in this episode, she found out that he was lying. This is different from the books, by the way, but she found out that he was pretending, because he gave her not only the name Solo, but then he said his name is Cole Myers. And then she finds out, like, no, Cole Myers is this other dude who actually was the IT shadow. And he's pretending to be Cole Myers for some reason. Why? That's basically where it ended. And he obviously was so protective of that identity he had created for himself, stolen for himself, that he flipped out on her about it.
Yeah, even though we've watched a few episodes ahead, we are still none the wiser about that. So hopefully that's an element they pick up in the remaining episodes of the season.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think they have to. I mean, they're setting all that up. This is the stuff they're going to wrap up, right? These particular mysteries, like what happened with Salvador Quinn in that letter, and what's Solo's real identity. I think that these are things that have to be cleared up by the end of the season.
Yeah.
For Elisa says, I really enjoyed episode 5. It was very dense, but for me, Jules and Solo's interplay was fine. I can't wait to see what happens to their tenuous relationship. Lucas working for Bernard was very interesting. Are the two silos connected? Is that a way back for Jules? Sims and Camille do not seem happy at all with his new role. Are they willing to undermine and usurp Bernard? I'm worried about Mechanical. And I mean, are they willing to undermine and usurp Bernard? Camille certainly is. I don't know. Is Sims?
Definitely.
Another theory about them being connected. I don't know. Any other thoughts on Fur Elisa's thoughts?
No, only that I am. I've said it before in various pods that, yeah, I am absolutely convinced that not just Silo 17 and 18 are connected, but that all 50 silos are part of one closed ecosystem.
Okay. Closed ecosystem, how? In what way?
In the sense that they're all connected. Each silo is connected to every other silo, but none of the silos are connected to anything in the real world, the up top, the surface.
Okay. But if the silos are connected, why don't they know it?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know, but they are if I am proved wrong on this, I'm going to be proved very, very wrong on this.
But connected, can I ask, connected in what way? Connected in like that tunnel you can walk between them, or connected in a way like they can communicate, or?
At some point in the past, they were connected in the sense that you could walk between the different silos.
Okay.
They aren't anymore, but at some point they were.
I mean, yeah, I don't want to comment on whether or not that is like the book, but even if it's not, that doesn't mean it's not the case in the show.
Okay.
So, who knows?
But yeah, that is a particular silo hill.
Yeah.
That is a particular contaminated hill I will die on.
Okay.
You'll
take the bad tape and...
I will take the bad tape and I will stand on that hill.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, our final piece of feedback today comes from Abby, who is my co-host on the spoiler cast on the book club version of our silo discussions. So you can hear her thoughts live there. But about episode 5, she says, what an episode. The Simses have different agendas. Rob getting demoted to judge was sweet, but also a bit stupid from Bernard, as now he got himself a full-on dangerous hater. We are back on track with Lucas, feels like, and majorly off track with Jules and Solo. Please don't fight. Loved Rebel Papa Nichols. And then she says, one day passed, and I am still kind of salty about where the story stands with Solo and Jules. Even if not a full-on heart attack, to paraphrase Alicia, it still rankles. The new detectiving by Jules felt artificial. Do we need that wrinkle? I find I am enjoying more the new characters introduced or expanded on in the show. The new alliance between Billings and Hank. The deepening understanding, Billank, as Luke put it.
Yeah, Billank, yeah.
The deepening understanding between Knox and Shirley. Sherlock's, the nebulous relationships between Bernard and Simsnard, obviously, and the wild card Camille, who has no portmanteau because she's always on her own.
Yeah, she's a wild card.
Papa Nichols was my MVP for this episode, protect at all cost. Yeah. No, I think a lot of people were commenting about the speech that he gave to Bernard, you know, where he's just kind of like, "What, you're going to make me stop loving my daughter? I don't think so. It's not going to work on me. It's not going to work on anyone else. Good day, sir. I will take her belongings."
Yeah, it was a very good speech.
Mm-hmm. Any final thoughts on what Abby said or anyone else?
I mean, obviously, I can't speak to what is on track with the book or what is not on track with the book. I am finding that I'm more drawn to what's going on in Silo 18 than I am to what's going on in Silo 17. And that's nothing to do with Rebecca Ferguson or Steve Zahn.
No, they're perfect, yeah.
You know, no, I just find the politics and the society of Silo 18 more interesting. I don't know how much longer they can sustain Steve Zahn and Rebecca Ferguson off by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because every episode is starting to feel a little bit similar, that they have to invent something, they have to go somewhere, there's a task they need to complete.
Right.
It is starting to feel like one of the, we talked about this before, it is starting to feel a little bit like one of those adventure computer games you had, you know, point and click games you had when you were a kid. I'm not saying that I have a problem with it now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, but I do wonder like how much longer from a storytelling point of view that is sustainable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like we should give a heads up that episode 6 is a banger of an episode. I'm so excited for people to see it, but it does focus mostly on Silo 18.
It does.
So their story is definitely not slow in that episode because they appear at one point, but yeah. Yeah, I guess we'll leave it there. I love to hear everyone's thoughts. A lot of, you know, prescient thinking as someone who's watched two more episodes and read the books. I think you are all asking the right questions, asking a lot of questions that make Luke and I think about things in new ways. And that's why we really love doing these feedback episodes.
Yeah. So thanks for everybody for taking the time. And if we didn't get to your feedback, that doesn't mean we haven't read it. It's just
right.
We have to keep these shows to a reasonable length.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and Luke and I, we're both definitely excited to talk about episode 7 next, but is there anything you want to add here?
No, except we know more than you do. We know.
Oh, see, I'm not, that's not me. That's Luke. Don't put that on me. That's not me. I'm like, I want to tell you the things. Who wants to know? Apple will kill us.
No, I'm like Bernard. I know a secret.
Well, we definitely want to, our next feedback episode, as I mentioned before, it's going to be a roundup of episodes 6 through 8 after the holidays. So please do keep sending in your feedback. You can email it to woolshiftdustpodcast@gmail.com. You'll find that link in the show notes. Voicemails are also welcome or encouraged. We'd love you to join with your voice on the pod as well. And do also check out, there's links in the show notes to the Discord and Blue Sky. We'd love to chat with you there as well. And the spoiler cast discussion with Abby for this week, is
the nature of the apocalypse, as in what actually happened that made this whole silo system start and how things got this way.
So that's available to subscribers and season pass holders, where we talk about how things are different in the show and the book, and what that means for the future, basically. And a big welcome to the newest Silozins and Storyzins who have joined. I will be shouting out the newest members by name during the regular weekly breakdowns. Those who are subscribed on Supercast and Patreon monthly, around the time that this comes out, you will also be getting our Christmas special about A Christmas Carol and The Goblins Who Stole a Sexton, which is a short story that when once you hear it, you're going to be like, oh, yeah, that was definitely the precursor to A Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
So do check out. We have our teaser episode about what exactly we're covering already out. So you can check that out and watch along if you like, or just listen, because you know the plot to A Christmas Carol, don't you? But there's also an option for people who are not interested in that stuff, not interested in the Dune stuff or other Hugh Howey stuff. You just want Silo. There is something called Silo Season Passes where you can get a batch of episodes for season one in books or season two or the two together for a single one-time fee. You'll find those links in the show notes as well. And thank you so much, by the way, to those of you who have recommended us to friends, as I've heard from people, or left kind reviews. It's really good to know, reading these reviews, that even book readers appreciate the book comparison reminders. And we're so glad to hear from the new friends we've met on Blue Sky. And there's really no better compliment that you could give us as individuals than calling us witty. So thank you for that. These reviews are not only a huge help in nudging the algorithms in our favor and helping would-be listeners on the fence to give us a try, the encouragement is also just, it really brightens our day, which, you know, speaking for myself here, can really be the boost I need on certain days, because this podcast's a lot of work. So thank you for letting us know the effort is being seen and appreciated, and we can't tell you how much it means to us that you're here listening right now.
Yeah, and I, for one, have a giant ego that needs to be fed, so thank you for that.
Well, speaking of your giant ego that needs to be fed, let's talk about your other podcast venture.
It could be said I do that with my co-host Will Cooling and Simon Alvey, two of my friends from university. We talk British politics, we talk international politics, we talk culture, and whatever else takes our collective fancy. We've just done an episode rounding up the general election in the Irish Republic, the strange resignation of Louise Hay, the former British Transport Secretary, and inspired by our Christmas Carol coverage, we each named a historical event that we'd like recreated with Muppets. So if you want to listen to that, please check that out in Apple and all good podcast platforms.
And you'll find a link in the show notes as well. And do also check out the Lorehounds feed, where David and I are doing weekly Dune prophecy breakdowns. Luke, I think you're still on episode one there, just too busy with other stuff.
Yeah, no, I've got some time off over Christmas. That is going to be my project over the holidays. Okay.
Yeah, only six episodes, so it's almost done this season.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And John and Marilyn are also doing some mid-season coverage of The Skeleton Crew over there, which is a show I am really, really enjoying. So I'm sending in voicemails because I'm just too busy with this stuff. But I can't wait to break down The Skeleton Crew eventually once we get to Era 7 on the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast. And also in the Lorehounds feed, there's a Wicked one-shot coming out this week, and also it's kind of a hybrid of a one-shot covering Joker Folie à Deux, which is now available on streaming, but also it's Jean and I did our first versus episode. So we have Joker from DC versus Madcap, a Marvel character, and we talk about the characters and what would happen if they fought. And there's also, of course, always lots of other stuff happening there. And do check out the other affiliates on the network. Properly Howard is in the middle of their A Few Good Films series based on the cast of A Few Good Men. The Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast from me, obviously. Radioactive Ramblings is doing their coverage of Arcane and Ghibli and Red Rising, the book series. Nevermind the Music is always bringing together music and psychology, and hopefully a future episode on Mark's experience with a harmonium. And do catch up on the separate Severance feed, where the guys from Properly Howard and the guys from the Lorehounds got together, and they are covering Severance season two coming up, so you can binge the season one coverage to catch up. Okay. Final thoughts, Luke?
No, you've squeezed this lemon dry, Alicia.
I do my best. That's how we make lemonade. All right. Well, we'll be back in your ears for our episode 6 breakdown on Friday. Before then, I really recommend you get that boo-boo on your arm checked out. It's not looking too good.
How to have fun. Anytime. Anywhere. Step 1. Go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step 2. Collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step 3. Play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games. All for free?
Step 4. Unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.